Welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Allison with a Y, here with my co-hosts, Allison with an I.
Hey.
And Patrick.
Hello.
And we are here to discuss the 1979 Dracula featuring Frank Langella. This was my pick.
And we're every Dracula movie on Netflix now.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, y'all. This is every Dracula movie on Netflix. But like the 1931 Bela Lugosi Dracula film, Dracula 1979 is based on a 1924 stage adaptation of Bram Stoker's famous novel. Inspired by, I would say more like, not following. Frank Langella had won a Tony Award for his performance as Dracula in the 1977 revival of the play, and he reprises his role here. The film begins as Dracula arrives in London in 1913, where he visits Dr. Jack Seward, played by Donald Pleasence, and his daughter Lucy, played by Kate Nelligan. Yes, that's Lucy Seward, not Lucy Westenra, Lucy's best friend Mina Van Helsing. Yes, Mina Van Helsing is immediately enthralled by Dracula's uncontrollable riz. So Dracula seduces her, drinks her blood, and kills her. Baffled by the wounds on his daughter's neck, Dr. Seward asks Mina's father, Dr. Abraham Van Helsing, played by Laurence Olivier, to help. Lucy is the next to be taken by Dracula after she offers herself to him as his bride. The doctors set out to learn the secret behind Dracula and save Lucy.
So I think you guys talked about how you had a Halloween party and this was playing in the background and then you were intrigued and so you decided to pick it for the movie. But any other reasons you picked this? Why?
I mean, mostly just Frank Langella's riz. I mean, that's pretty much why I was like, I actually want to like sit down with this film and really watch it.
We put this on in the background and we were like, Trump being visited by Mom Donnie.
I was going to say, he has Mom Donnie level riz in this film.
Yeah, we were just like, we were trying to have a Halloween party and we were just like beaming up at Frank Langella instead.
And, like, everybody was mesmerized, just and then staring at the TV.
And then the next day, we mysteriously were wearing vampire outfits.
do I ask you to indulge in that? Or, yeah, okay.
to wear vampire outfits?
Yeah, just by coincidence.
And another thing that, like, made me also intrigued by this is that it's based on the Broadway revival, 1977 Broadway revival that was designed by Edward Gorey, who is one of my favorite illustrators of all time. Best known for the Gashly Crumb Tinies. So that was like a cool sort of, I guess, perk of watching this, and I thought it was really interesting how it was set in a different time period from when Dracula is normally set. It was Edwardian as opposed to late Victorian. I mean, so there's like really just, you know, 20-30 year difference between the two, 20-30, but still. And that's like Edward Gorey's style is often very Edwardian, so I really loved that.
Well, and the reason we said, I mean, I guess I shouldn't take for granted that people listen to every episode of the podcast. The reason we said it's every Dracula movie on Netflix now is because we did Bram Stoker's Dracula a few episodes ago. And if you listen to that, you know Allison with a Y is our resident Dracula scholar.
I am not a Dracula scholar.
And if you didn't listen to that, now you know.
I just know more than your average person about Dracula.
Yeah, that's why you're the resident Dracula scholar. Among us, if there's a Dracula scholar, it's you.
And I'm certain that we talked about Nosferatu, old and new, at some point. Yeah. So many Dracula movies.
Yes.
I got to stop the like glaze fest you guys have going over there about Frank Langella, especially
I felt
comparing
this
him
coming.
To Zoran Mamdani. Let me just stop you there and just say, absolutely do not share that sentiment with me.
I felt this coming. I felt it in my bones.
Hot take.
Is it a hot take? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have to say, I watched this with my mom, who is my OG horror queen, right? She's the reason I picked up Anne Rice and Stephen King as a young lady, because that's what we had laying around. And I don't want to tip my hat, but we were both like, this fucking guy is just so punchable. I could not stand his stupid face.
Oh, well, okay. So let me break down. You know, this is going to be, we're doing a panel here. It's Meet the Press. It's the panel on Frank Langella's hotness. Here's the case for Frank Langella's Dracula being hot. I had only seen him in more recent movies. You know, as an older guy, playing Richard Nixon, playing Perry White in the Superman movie. I had never seen him as a young guy, let alone playing a character who is supposed to be like canonically sexy or appealing. And I was just like, wow, this man was a very handsome young man. And also, he's not young in this movie. That also shocked me when I learned he was like 41 or something in the movie. And so I think he has like a handsome face, but also he just has like insane riz to me. It's like, absolutely, I understand. I mean, he could look like Gollum or something. And if he had that level of riz, I'd be like, okay, whatever you say, sir. There's just like the way he barely blinks and just, it's creepy. Like, he's a bad guy for sure, but it is very appealing. I think kind of in the way that, I think you both described Gary Oldman's Dracula as pretty sexy. I did not find him sexy. I understood like why he was powerful and why he had that effect in the movie. In this movie, I'm like, I understand the power. Also, he's hot. That's my case for Frank Langella being hot.
I think Gary Oldman had riz. That's what we agreed on. I don't know that sexy, except there were a couple costumes that he wore that we were like, so hot.
The top hat, the spectacles.
It's the aura. Sometimes it's just the aura. And I feel like in this movie, Frank Langella had aura for days.
Oh, God. And I have never been drier.
Wait, so you didn't, I mean, like, you thought he was a creep, which he absolutely is. You know, it's kind of like Gary Oldman Dracula. Like, the guy's a creep no matter what. Dracula's always a creep. But you didn't think he had, like, even charisma?
No. Let me clarify. I don't think he was a creep because he was playing Dracula, who is a creep. Gary Oldman was a creep because he was acting his ass off, and his Dracula was so layered and complex, and there were different ages and time and costuming to go along with it. And obviously we all stan Bram Stoker's Dracula. I think Frank Langella's Dracula was so flat, flat to me.
Whoa.
Wow.
Interesting.
This is fascinating.
I found him spellbinding. I found him spellbinding every moment he was on screen.
I couldn't take my eyes off of him. And not because I think like he's actually, like, I don't know if I would be like, yeah, that's the sexiest dude in the room anywhere. But with the way he held himself and the way he spoke and the way he like just really locked into people, the attention that he gave when he was giving attention was just like, mesmerizing.
Yeah.
I felt like he was doing too much, yet not enough all at once.
I mean, I cannot compare that movie to a modern movie at all, but I think for the time, I thought it was, you know, appropriate for the acting styles of the 1970s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that. I guess if I could see it through a different lens. But that would require me to be like, well, a lot of things weren't as good in 1979 or like, something.
Objectively, I think a lot of filmmaking just wasn't as good.
Yeah, that's true. You're not
wrong. And the acting styles were still very theatrical.
Yeah.
They, you know, and especially when you're basing a film and like horror was so camp, so cheesy in the 70s. So I'm looking at it from, I didn't expect to really, I guess, like, get into a Dracula movie from the 1970s. And I was surprised that it really pulled me in. But, you know, I'm really trying to watch it, understanding the time that it came from, I guess.
You make a good case for it.
Yeah, I mean, differing opinions on Franklin Jella aside, this movie is stacked with talent. Like, I mean, Laurence Olivier, Donald Pleasance, you know, I don't have to explain to you fucking nerds, Dr. Loomis, come on.
Yeah.
Kate Nelligan is a big deal, who I had never heard of before until I was writing the synopsis today, but she's big, big deal, has been in all kinds of shit. And then also just like the behind the scenes talent too, behind the camera talent, the director John Badham also directed Saturday Night Fever, War Games, and Nick of Time, which is a wild resume.
Wow.
The writer wrote the Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake, which I haven't watched but is beloved, and wrote Big Trouble in Little China and directed Buckaroo Banzai, which is a fucking great movie. So yeah, there's just crazy talent involved in this movie. And I think for the most part, it actually shows. Like, Donald Pleasance is never really a great actor, to be honest. I mean, that also may be a hot take, but I feel like anyone could have played Dr. Loomis. Sorry, there's another Halloween hot take of many that I've dropped on the show. But Laurence Olivier, holy shit, man. He's got an emotional moment in this that destroyed me. We'll have to talk about it in the spoiler room. Mm. But yeah, I mean, some of the acting, I guess, a little stilted in places. But yeah, I don't know. Langella did it for me. And in general, this is just like, the movie's a goldmine of talent.
Yeah. Definitely. What did y'all think of kind of like the change in... Well, there's a lot of changes from the Dracula stories that we're used to, while still, you know, bringing in characters that we know, names that we know, in the very least. What were your thoughts on, like, those changes in, like, characters and, like, time, and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, the character changes really confuse me, primarily Mina and Lucy.
Yeah.
And the fact that Lucy in Bram Stoker's Dracula looked like the girl who was playing Mina in this movie. Mm-hmm. So I swear to God, I kept having to stop the movie and be like, Mom, is that Mina or Lucy? And she would tell me. And I did it like 10 times until I finally figured it out. But that, like, I don't know. I don't understand why the need for that. But the actress.
So I can explain it to you. Actually, I was reading about this before.
Great.
And the funny thing is that the explanation is kind of that even the director, John Badham, didn't really have an explanation. Someone asked him in an interview why they did that. And he said he couldn't really remember why. He said he could not quite remember, but that maybe he and the writer, W.D. Richter, and this is a quote, felt like Mina was a dopey name and Lucy was kind of a nice name.
Oh, my God.
That's your explanation.
I guess I had assumed that switch had been made in the play and they just carried it over. But wow, that's a choice.
Yeah, well, quite possibly.
I was so used to Lucy looking like this, like, loose, curled, redhead, strawberry blonde, fiery woman. And then that's what Mina looked like in this movie. So that fucked me up. And I guess
It was very confusing for me, too, for a while.
Good. I'm glad I wasn't alone. And I guess knowing that there wasn't a good reason for it makes it feel annoying, if I'm being honest.
Oh, and also the play actually does switch the names, too. So,
So
I guess it's not specific to the movie, but still, if that's the reason, it's a stupid reason. I mean, I don't know, the changes in general. I haven't read the novel. I don't have as much of a commitment to sort of the source material here. I guess what I'll say about this, the time period switch doesn't really move the dial for me one way or the other. I feel like the narrative is grossly simplified in this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Like, I mean, Bram Stoker's Dracula is longer than this. Just to compare, it's we keep bringing that up, and we're just comparing them because we watched Bram Stoker's Dracula recently. Obviously, there's a lot of adaptations of this material that are well known and wonderful. But to compare, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula is, of course, longer, but not by much, really. Like, you know, maybe 20 minutes, something like that. And you get a lot more depth of, like, relationship development, character development, especially, like, if you think about Lucy / Mina, you know, like, Mina's, like, kind of done for really fast in this. Like, you don't get much of a sense of her, and she's already been, you know, she's already gotten. She gets got. Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, it just feels like kind of, like, compacted. You know, we don't get anything in Transylvania. You know, it starts after the Count has already landed in London.
I think it starts with the Demeter having been shipwrecked.
Like, Renfield's in it, but kind of barely. It feels like, and I don't know, I don't necessarily even mean this as a criticism, it feels like Dracula Light, you know?
It feels like when they were writing the stage adaptation, they were like, let's take these characters and condense this story to something more manageable with a smaller cast. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. And I mean, I like it in a sense, you know, I like the, all right, you know, cut the crap. Let's get to the point, you know? And I also like, obviously, the kind of deeper, richer story that you get from a Bram Stoker's Dracula or Nosferatu, either version. Well, the original Nosferatu doesn't have a ton of, like, depth and richness to the story, but I guess I mean the Eggers version. I like that take too. I just, I don't know. There was something enjoyable to me about, like, just give me the good stuff.
It's kind of fun. I don't always love it, but I liked it in this case when you take the original source material and you play with it a little bit more. You use the names and the setting or the circumstances as an inspiration, and then kind of take that and kind of create your own thing. I mean, it, you know,
it's a remix.
Yes, it's kind of like, you know, our Lord and Savior, Mike Flanagan. It's like what he does, you know, where you take, like, this very well-known source material, you take some of the characters, but they're not the exact same people. The relationships aren't always the same. And you think of different ways to sort of play with all of those elements. And I like to look at this movie like that's what they did, or the, you know, the stage version that they based it off of, that's what they did with it. And I'm like, this is like a fun, it's like a fun iteration of it without some of the slog. Because, like, in the reality of, like, the original Bram Stoker's Dracula is there's a lot of slog in there. This is zippy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what I would say it's one of my favorite genres of adaptation. Is, I mean, because an adaptation is never going to be like a faithful, complete, truthful retelling of source material. And so I like when an adaptation kind of plays with the source material a little bit and does that iterative, remixy kind of thing. I feel like we need to get a counterpoint in here. I'm not sure if you also have negative feelings on this as you did on Frank Langella, but how did all this sit with you?
I think it's hard. It's hard for me to not feel like I'm comparing them or, like, ranking them, just because we watched Bram Stoker. Nosferatu came out last year. It was all the rage. And then there's this. And I think it's hard. It's hard for me to, I guess, like, have enough objectivity around it. So I will say the acting aside from Frank Langella, I thought was fantastic. The actress, Kate Nelligan, I thought she was incredible.
She's so good.
Incredible. I don't think I had ever actually seen a movie with Laurence Olivier. And I get why he had the kind of fame and acclaim that he did, you know, in his heyday. Like, he was incredible. The storyline, for me personally, I really like the whole lead up to with Jonathan meeting the Count and the Count kind of, you know, like, leveraging that relationship to get what he wanted. I liked that part of the story. So I think that part being missing from this adaptation, it's not the thing that bothered me the most. And really nothing bothered me about this movie except Dracula's fucking one expression that he made the whole time. I could not. I just couldn't do it. But I mean, I'm all for an adaptation. I wonder if it was like, I don't want to say too soon, but I hadn't, you know, when we reviewed Bram Stoker's, I hadn't seen that movie in probably 20 years. And I was like, holy fuck, what a movie. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that this was going to be hard to watch after that. I had a feeling. And I guess, I don't know, I wasn't able to maybe step away and like see this as its own thing as much as I wish that I did. But truly, the only thing that ground my gears about this was your boy.
That's so funny.
I know. And honestly, I'm like, okay, thinking to myself, who would I have swapped in his place? But I don't know a lot of actors from that era. Like, I don't know enough about them to say, oh, this guy would be great. But I just don't – he just didn't do it for me. He was neither scary nor sexy nor smoldering nor mysterious. He was – I felt like he – what I don't even know. He just made me – he gave me the ick so badly. We'll just say that. So,
well, I think your survival skills are better than ours in this case.
Yeah. You guys would be goners.
Yeah, I would have known it wasn't going to end well for me with him.
And you wouldn't have cared?
One of those intense stares and I would be like,
oh, God.
I've lived a good life.
I did kind of like that this movie is light on Jonathan, too. Because Jonathan is, I mean, even if you don't have, like, dead-ass, dead-eyed personality of a napkin Keanu playing Jonathan, the character is just always sort of boring to me. And I mean, he's sort of supposed to be. Like, he's kind of, you know, just the stiff who gets, you know, played to some degree. But I didn't mind this not having a lot of Jonathan in it.
Yeah. Agreed. Also, oh my God, this movie was, I mean, I should have known. I should have had these expectations going in. It was the 1970s, very close to the 1980s, but it was so horny. I wasn't prepared for how horny this movie was.
Well, and apparently, you know, we keep talking about these revisions, and at least according to the Wikipedia, a lot of the revisions were intended to make this like more romantic or I don't know if Wikipedia used
that's
the word.
That's a definition for romantic.
Erotic.
Wow.
But like the movie was billed as a love story. Like oh, was part of the tagline or the marketing campaign. And I don't know. I didn't find it a whole lot more or less horny than anything. I mean, it's certainly Bram Stoker's Dracula is way hornier than this.
Oh, it's like the horniest.
It's hard to get much hornier than Bram Stoker's Dracula.
It's true. It's
when
true.
Your like source material is a Victorian novel, you know? Like
well, Dracula scholar, like how horny is the original? Do you recall like horniness?
I don't remember it being aggressively horny. I mean, I definitely obviously and we talked about this in the Bram Stoker's episode, but, you know, the Nosferatu character, the vampire is like, is one metaphor for sex.
Right.
And has been that way for a long time. I don't know how much that reading came into things later or, I mean, there's definitely like, I think there's interpretations. I think Bram Stoker put some of that. I don't think it was as like aggressive though as people have like come to interpret vampires as being. But I don't know. I'm not a history of vampires scholar.
Yeah.
I just like Dracula.
If I had to guess, I feel like the horny level of this movie was probably closer to the horny level of the source material than Bram Stoker's. I think Bram Stoker took the source material and made it real, real porn-like.
Yeah, but I still think this was surprisingly hornier than I expected it to be.
There's some titties busting out, right?
Right, there's some titties. There's Lucy, who is like, you know, in Bram Stoker's Dracula was Mina, right? Flop the character. So Lucy in this adaptation, like, she goes off, she and Jonathan boink at some point.
Oh, right. You know? Yeah.
They go meet in like a carriage or something to, you know, have a little midnight rendezvous.
That's true. I guess that is pretty horny, especially for the time.
Yeah. And then Dracula shows up and they also, you know, have a little sesh.
In like the most, I don't know, it was so 70s, a super psychedelic, like acid, like very colorful. I forget even how it plays. I remember more how it made me feel. Like I watched it a week ago and I feel like it's just like red, like blotches of color kind of like expanding across the screen, and their bodies, like the silhouettes of their bodies kind of like melding into each other, like
so
a 70s. Like a tripped out, extra tripped out, like Bond sequence or Bond title sequence or something. It was wild.
Yeah, so I feel like this movie was pretty horny.
Did we get naked boobs? I don't think we got naked boobs.
No, we definitely got boobs at some point.
Did we?
I thought I remembered that.
There are a couple scenes where he's like doing the thing where he like runs his hand down her kind of like clavicle, and then you're like, oh, here come tits. And then there were no tits. But I can't remember.
maybe it was just implied tits.
It was implied tits, yeah. Yeah. But I could be wrong. I could have missed, or I could be forgetting about some naked tits, but... Again, you can't compare anything to Bram Stoker's Dracula in terms of anything, because it's just outlandish.
Yeah,
there is
titties
mild
be
nudity.
Popping in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Titties be popping.
There is mild nudity because, yeah, at one point, was it Lucy or Mina? One of them is wearing like a see-through nightie.
Yeah.
That you definitely see some titty and some bush through.
Oh.
I thought there was bush. I don't know. It was the 70s. Everybody had bush.
I was
going
to say, in the 70s, they were not afraid to show some bush.
Yeah. They were full bush back
in
the
film.
70s.
Yeah.
And then there is a close-up of a breast, according to the internet.
Just one tit. Singular.
One. Yeah. Singular. Well, glad we got that sorted out.
That was very important.
Okay, but was the movie romantic? I mean, I think the part that really struck me as odd was that they intended this to be romantic. I didn't find it terribly romantic at all. Like, horny, okay, sure, but...
The setting's romantic, and that's, like, it. You know, just it being Edwardian era, I find that era very romantic.
Mm.
But, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't romanticize the era, and I don't find the portrayal of it in this romantic, and I also didn't find like a ton of like romance going on between the characters necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, even like the romance between Lucy and Jonathan, while Jonathan has slightly more personality than Keanu in this one, he's still kind of just like, what did you call him before? The personality of a...
Napkin.
Napkin, yeah, he still kind of has that vibe.
I guess I could see the romance of it. You know, she genuinely was like in love with him. I feel like it didn't take a lot. I don't know. I think she, I liked, I'm jumping around here in my head, so let me try to clarify. I liked that Lucy was very headstrong. I liked that she was... especially for women in that era, right? In that Gregorian era, she was very outspoken. She was very much not like what women are supposed to do, which is like be seen and not heard kind of thing, and be just kind of at the side, you know, by your man. She was very different, and I liked that a lot about her. And I think because of that, she like put up a little fight at first, which I appreciated. She wasn't like just a total doormat for Dracula. And he liked that about her. Like he said that a couple of times. But then I do feel like they really had, you know, their love story was written pretty well. Like I genuinely did feel like they cared a lot about each other. Mm. I don't know about if it felt romantic, but I could feel the love between them.
I can see that. I felt like, you know, the love from her was a spell.
But, yeah.
But I see your point. I mean, like, they did, I think, do their due diligence in showing the connection that the two of them had, whether that was from a spell or not.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But she
was
a little spitfire.
I don't find that romantic. Oh, I loved her.
Yeah, she was great.
Oh, yeah.
And she was written really differently than Mina was written in Bram Stoker's and in Nosferatu. She was, she reminded me of Elizabeth in Frankenstein, like that same type of woman that's just not the average woman for that day and age. You know, she stands out because she is outspoken and because she questions the status quo and all those things. And I love characters like that.
Yeah, it almost felt like they actually kind of took some of the qualities of original Lucy and like mix them in with Mina, because Mina is very smart but like mild mannered typically, and then Lucy is, you know, she's a little more at the whims of her emotions, but she's also quick to question things and point out, you know, Lucy's just like a little bit more of a loose cannon, but in like a good way, where she was, you know, people found her feisty and interesting in the original Bram Stoker's Dracula. So it's like they kind of married some of like the best parts of the two characters into her.
Totally agree.
Another one to watch on Valentine's Day, I guess. With hard eyes. And what was the other one that we decided was a... Oh, Your Monster.
Your Monster.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day triple feature.
And another thing that impressed me about this was the cinematography and just kind of the general like visual aesthetic of the thing. Like, you know, when I said the time period isn't really romanticized, didn't feel romanticized to me, it feels ugly and it feels dirty. And like just almost every scene in the movie has this kind of grayish blue tinge to it, other than that weird sex scene we were just talking about, which stands out dramatically for that exact reason. But it kind of impressed me because, you know, today so many movies have this aggressive like color correction, color grade throughout, like, you know, the Zack Snyder like bronzy 300 kind of look, or I don't know, it's just in so many movies these days. I mean, I think of the Eggers Nosferatu, you know, it's just got that look throughout, and that's a lot easier, I think, to achieve these days. And I, you know, I'm not Chris, I don't have the technical knowledge, and I may be betraying some ignorance here, but I think there's a lot more work involved on this movie in making every scene have that sort of cast to it. And it's funny because, like, I would find that dull. It wouldn't excite me if I saw it in a movie today, but it was very impressive to me in a movie from 1979.
That's a good point. Yeah, it did feel kind of dingy and dirty.
Yeah. And just the design in general, I appreciated a lot. You know, like, there's this insane conceit in the movie that, like, Seward's home is also an insane asylum. Like, he has this wonderful mansion, but then he also has his insane asylum that he runs in, like, the ground floor / basement. And I don't know, there were just some really over-the-top. And the design of the asylum and the mansion was very over-the-top, like, kind of gelled perfectly with that ridiculous concept that was in the script, and I enjoyed that.
I'm glad you brought that up. Where did the asylum come from? Why do you have an explanation for that? Because I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Well, that's where Dr. Seward works, because Renfield is one of his patients.
Okay.
And so he's a doctor out of the asylum, but
not in his house.
Obviously.
But putting it in his house is insane. Especially because, I mean, there's like a lot of people in there as portrayed in this movie. There's like, what, I don't know, you see at least 20, 30 different patients hanging out down there, right?
Yeah. I mean, like in the book, you know, Dr. Seward is still like relatively young. He's a relatively young bachelor. And he lived in an apartment attached to the asylum he was the main physician. But yeah, it's ridiculous that like he wouldn't have had a whole mansion with with his asylum that he started and you know, single-handedly runs underneath it or whatever.
Right. It threw me for an incredible loop early on when like Lucy and Mina are having a conversation in this like, you know, sort of ornate bedroom, like clearly very, you know, stately, well-to-do estate. And then they refer to like something going on in the asylum downstairs. And I was like, wait, what?
Bonkers.
Never really properly explained. But yeah, the vibes are pretty solid. I mean, again, we keep comparing, and I guess we're going to continue to. It's no Bram Stoker's Dracula vibes, what could be, but it's still pretty, pretty impressive vibes. It's a good mood.
Yeah.
It's a good
Is there anything else we want to talk about before we go to the spoiler insane asylum? No, we've already had one of those before.
Yeah, before we go downstairs to the spoiler asylum in our home.
It wasn't even run well. Like, people were just running amok in there.
No.
Oh, yeah. No, it was terrible. I'm sure, period accurate to how such establishments were managed at the time.
Probably.
Just everyone running around with syphilis.
It probably was actually much more better run than most of the establishments at the time.
Oh, yeah. That was probably a 5-star establishment.
I think we should spoil it. I think that there's more meat we can chew on.
Wait, can we rank like Dracula adaptations?
Yes.
First? Yes.
Okay.
Oh shit. All right, you're looking at me. I've probably seen the most of anybody, so now I have the most complicated list to draw up. I mean, like Bram Stoker's Dracula, of course, number one. Shit. Man, I said this and now I'm trying to like order them all in my head. I gotta put Werner Herzog's Nosferatu number 2. That goes hard. Have either of you seen that?
No. Werner Herzog did a Nosferatu.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it came out the same year as the movie we're reviewing today, actually.
Huh.
Whoa.
Weird timing, yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
next Not time at the moment. Next time it's my pick.
Yeah. I would probably put, and this is like unofficial, Shadow of the Vampire, number 3. Anybody seen that one?
No.
Okay. Well, guess who plays sort of Dracula in that? Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. You've told me about the movie.
Oh, I have told you
times.
About this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I could see
Willem Dafoe playing Dracula. I could see it.
Yeah.
It is a weird movie. It's about the making of the original Nosferatu, and he plays Max Schreck, who played Nosferatu, but the conceit of the movie is that Max Schreck was an actual vampire. So, like, John Malkovich as F.W. Murnau is, like, kind of unraveling the mystery of how his star is an actual vampire. And it's it's a little ridiculous, but pretty amazing. I would put this at number 4, 1979. I would put... I love the original Nosferatu. I still have to put it a little lower on the list. I'll go Bela Lugosi, original Nosferatu, Eggers Nosferatu, because I wasn't crazy about Eggers Nosferatu. And I think that's all the Draculas I've seen. I don't think I'm leaving out anything. Yeah, I think that's it. You were excited about this. What's your list?
God, I haven't seen that many. I was just going to rank like 3 or 4. I think Bram Stoker is number 1 for me. I will say Eggers Nosferatu number 2, original Nosferatu number 3, this number 4, but it could be lower. because I just didn't like Dracula. I'm sorry. Why? How many are on your list?
I mean, not as many as Patrick. And also, I know I've seen like some shitty Dracula adaptations over the years that I couldn't even remember. Like, I used to watch bad movies on like Sci-Fi. Like, we'd watch horrors. My mom and I would watch like all like the horror movies that played on Saturdays.
Oh God, I just remembered I also watched Dracula Untold, which was that awful movie that was supposed to be part of the shitty ass Universal Monsters like reboot universe, the dark universe. That was awful. Oh, that's God. Obviously last.
Yeah, I don't even know how to rank these because the 4 main ones, I like them all.
So this, Bram Stoker's,
and then the Eggers. 2 Nosferatus.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't.
Really. I mean, that's a okay. solid lineup.
I mean, Bram Stoker is my favorite because it's like, you know, the closest thing to biblically accurate as you can get for an adaptation. But I can't really rank the rest.
They're as close just... as you can get to biblically accurate, even though it completely made up the whole Vlad the Impaler business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still like, it's like the most faithful in so many ways to the book because it includes characters that aren't often included. And like, it, I don't know, it's I appreciate it.
I guess adaptations of this have generally been like not super faithful in general. And so much of the mythos that's been spun out is based on like adaptations that don't have a lot to do with the book.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, that's a long tangent. I just like, I've seen so many different versions of this story and there's so many like different really interesting takes. Like, it's kind of unusual that, you know, usually there's like one or two really good adaptations and then a bunch of shitty ones, but there's a lot of like pretty great adaptations of Dracula, actually.
And there's a lot of really bad ones because so many people have made adaptations of it. It's just maybe the most, probably one of like the most represented characters, literary characters in film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Christopher Lee played Dracula in, I think, multiple movies. I've never seen any of those. You know, there's multiple Universal monster era Dracula movies. Like, there's a lot. There's a lot. We'll leave it at that. View it. I give this a view it. That's my review.
All right. Well, Patrick gave it a view it. Do you want to expand on that idea?
No, I just had a lot of fun with this. It's messy. It's definitely a little messy. And not in like a calculatedly messy way, the way Bram Stoker's Dracula is. But it's just, you know, it's an imperfect film. But it was pretty damn entertaining to me. I like, as I said, that it keeps things pretty tight. And Langella is daddy.
Blech. I'm a screw
yes, Allison
it.
With an eye.
I'm a screw it. I'm sorry. I just couldn't. Okay. I can't do it with that guy. Why?
I'm a view it. I love this movie. I think it's so fun. Like I said, yeah, it's. I think you have to be prepared for the fact that this is a film from the 1970s. But I love classic films. I'm a big classic film like fan. So, you know, I kind of like know what to prepare myself for and understand that, like, you know, the acting is going to be a little stilted a lot of the time. Very different style, you know, things are going to be different. But for what it was, the time that it came from, it blew my expectations out of the water in a lot of ways. And yeah, I'm here for Frank Langella's Riz. And I understand that I doesn't agree with that, and that's okay. More for me, I guess. Before we head down to the insane asylum in the basement of our beautiful Edwardian mansion, we have some social media sites, platforms, whatever you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, EHMONcast. And TikTok at Amon Podcast. You can also join our Discord. The link is for the Discord server is in the show notes. And come tell us how horny or not you were for Frank Langella as Dracula in Dracula 1979.
You can also go to our website if you're looking for more horny content. Every horror movie on Netflix.com. Nothing makes you more hornier than listening to 220 episodes of dumbasses talking about movies on Netflix, and you can find that there. You know what else makes you horny? T-shirts with every horror movie on Netflix art on them, and you can find that incredible horniness at the horny merch store link on our website.
And leave us a review anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We would be grateful for it.
I noticed you didn't say a horny review,
and that you said it very, too many times.
That was a wise choice on your part.
Don't leave us a horny review. Or, right, you know what? Well, do it. We need all of them. I changed my mind.
Actually, I'll accept
horny reviews.
Yeah, I'll take a horny review. Go for it.
I changed my mind.
I need an ego boost.
All right. Well, see you in the insane asylum in the basement of our beautiful Edwardian mansion. Okay, we are down in the insane asylum in the basement of our mansion. To spoil this bitch.
Really quickly, I googled other horror movies made in 1979 just because I was curious, like tonally, if I had seen anything else that I could compare this to. And I'm a little bit surprised. So, When a Stranger Calls, The original Amityville Horror.
Ooh.
And Alien, which I didn't even think about.
Yes. Didn't, and I mean, original Halloween came out right around this time. Or maybe that, I think that was 78. Maybe.
Still very, very close.
Yeah.
Very close, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just interesting. Yeah.
Solid year for horror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I had on the break, I Googled who, because I had mentioned that I felt like Dracula was one of the most portrayed literary characters. And turns out Dracula holds the record as of 10 years ago for the most portrayed literary character on film.
Wow.
Wait, does that mean someone else has taken it in the past 10 years?
No, it's just nobody's overtaken it since it was determined. It's on the Guinness Book of World Records site. And nobody's been able to overtake them or overtake Dracula. I think like the next closest is Sherlock Holmes or something like that for a literary character. But that, like, Sherlock Holmes had half the amount of Dracula.
That's crazy, because there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes content
over out there. 10 years ago, this was 10 years ago, there were over 500 portrayals of Dracula in film and television.
Just film and TV. That's wild. That's insane. Yeah, it's funny because when we were talking about that before, something like that kind of flitted into the back of my mind. I think I had like read that, you know, record or whatever before. But, you know, it was one of those memories that was just like felt very half-baked. And I was like, I don't know if this is fact or fiction. I'm just going to shut my mouth.
So anyways, I'm starting a new podcast, Every Dracula Representation Adaptation Ever.
Yes.
And there will be over 500 episodes. So stay tuned.
Frankly, I'd be much more invested in that at this point than watching every horror movie on Netflix.
Stop it. I'm not actually doing this yet.
Yet. But so, okay, we're in spoiler asylum now, and I do have to say that there was one part that we're going to spoil now that actually was, I think, scary and done really, really, really well, and that's when they go into the catacombs. So I loved that. I loved that Mina's grave was basically empty, so they dug up her grave. It was empty, and then they kept digging, and there were tunnels. And I am a slut for a tunnel, for a catacomb.
Love a catacomb.
So by now they've asked Van Helsing to come and help, and obviously his daughter's in grave danger, or his daughter's dead, sorry.
And has clawed through the bottom of her coffin, right, to get into the catacombs, I think. Is that right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I don't know.
No, I think isn't there a hole in the bottom of the coffin, I think, when they dig her up? I don't know. Sorry, this may be too deep in the weeds. I just thought that was insane, if I'm remembering that detail correctly.
I love it.
Insane in the sense that I loved it.
I don't remember. But the scene where Mina approaches them, and she's very much dead, undead. And that, her corpse, her vampire scary corpse was scary.
Yes.
Yeah, it looked nasty.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a cool portrayal of the undead.
And I mean, this is one of the best scenes in the movie in general on a lot of levels. Like you said, the atmosphere of the catacombs is really cool. The undead Lucy looks, you know, appropriately awful. And her dad ends up having to fucking stake her. And Laurence Olivier acts the absolute fuck out of it. That was heartbreaking.
That was great. This is like really the best scene of the film.
Yeah.
The emotional stakes and. Wasn't even trying to do that. Yeah, those were some emotional stakes, and fucking hell,
it was an emotional stake.
Laurence Olivier, he delivers, and like, you know, for the most part, watching this film, I'm just having a fun time. Like that moment, actually, like. I think made me choke up a little bit.
Yeah, and I would say in general his performance was a little stilted, not necessarily in a bad way, but it felt a little heightened reality, a little unreal.
Theater.
It was stagey.
Yeah.
And then like this emotional moment comes kind of out of nowhere for a character who hasn't had a ton of like emotional stuff to do other than like walking around, like, you know, raising his eyebrow at like the weird goings on. And it's like, oh God, yes, you are holding your daughter who you just had to kill because there was no other choice. And your already dead daughter who you had to kill again because there was no choice. Oh. And he nails it. It's so good.
Yeah, it was real. That scene really did take the cake for me.
Yes.
And for our listeners, he meant Mina and not Lucy.
Yeah, but Mina is who you think Lucy normally is.
Right. I keep doing that just because it's so natural in my head. Like, it just, that's Lucy. Even though, like, in any adaptation, she is not usually Van Helsing's daughter either. I don't know. There's a lot.
That's also confusing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I think that moment was, it stood out for me in an awesome way. Like, I was like, more of this. Yes. More of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, Seward and Van Helsing figure out, you know, that Dracula's a vampire and that they need to get rid of Dracula to free Mina.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. Wanted to make sure I didn't do that again.
Well, free Lucy.
No, Lucy, yes. God damn it, I did do it again.
See, they had to kill Mina. They have to rescue Lucy.
Right, yes.
From it's the opposite.
The emotional grips of Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
So then what follows is a bunch of attempts to kill Dracula. Yeah. And I have to say, I was screaming at my television. Like, why are you taking a pause when you open his coffin and he's lying there defenseless? What? Just stab him. What are you doing? Like, I was just so fucking frustrated with their attempts.
Yeah, I mean, they completely botched this first attempt. And there's a lot of, like, Dracula turning into a bat and flying around the room and... I don't know. It's a little silly, but I also enjoyed it. Dracula feels like a menace, and the bat transformations for 1979. Sure, fine.
It felt a little. Those sequences felt like a little like Scooby-Doo antics time.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think the bat transformations was a time that I could pause and be like, okay, this is 1979, and it was not bad. And it was not bad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Campy. Like you said, why? Very campy.
Yes, very campy.
Yeah.
We're just, it's just like one attempt after another. And finally, they realized that Dracula had, like, took Lucy on the boat to go back to Transylvania. So... here's what I'll give it. And I think we briefly touched on this before. I'll give it for like the romantic thing. It seems like Dracula genuinely just really wants her to be his companion because he likes her. He wants her to be his queen. He says at one point, like, you know, I've had other bitches. But there's something special about this bitch, and
forever bitch.
Yeah, I want this to be my number one bitch.
I feel like he says that to them all.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he's one of those fuckboys.
Snake in the grass.
Fair.
Yeah.
But we don't see it, and he
And they were very sweet, like snuggling in his coffin on the boat back to Transylvania. Like
that
they
was actually kind of cute.
That was kind of cute.
It was cute.
Circumstances aside. Kind of cute.
Yeah.
But they're in the boat. They take the lid off the coffin again. I get that they don't want to hurt Lucy. But spoiler, Van Helsing is killed. And it's totally unnecessary because they were fumbling idiots with their execution of Dracula. Like, way too much time went by between... I have this stake in my hand and oopsie. Now he's out of the coffin and crawling in the walls or like up the ropes of the whatever.
Yeah. Clearly this version of Van Helsing is not a professional vampire hunter.
Yes. Exactly.
He's quite a novice.
Yeah. But
yeah. Van Helsing dies unnecessarily, I think. Unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. But as he dies, he does some metal shit. Him and Harker kind of... collaborate in the process of jamming a giant hook into like a meat hook almost into Dracula's back and then using some like hoist thing to hoist him up the mast of the ship from inside the ship. Like he's ripped out up through the ship's deck and hung from the mast, dangling there in the sun, and he ages rapidly and
that
dies.
Was cool.
Which was pretty
that was
cool.
It was cool. That was cool. Cool. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Pretty cool
practical effects.
Yep. Again, looks pretty sick for 1979.
I mean, fuck. Compared to like the slop we see now, the CGI slop.
Yeah.
Looks pretty cool for now.
Yeah. Seriously.
It was pretty cool for now. And but then he flies away as a bat.
I know. You're like, fuck, how did that happen?
Well, it's like his cape kind of flies away, and I feel like it's supposed to be a little, like, sort of ambiguous, because it does look very bat-like, which I think is intentional, but it's not, because we see an actual bat many times in this movie, and this isn't that. It's more just this, like, sort of bat-like shape of the cape flying away, I think, which I liked. I don't, I mean, what does it mean? Who knows? I don't think there's a sequel to this. It was a fun little weird final visual note. I liked it.
Yeah.
And I think the credits roll over that.
It was a fun way to end Dracula that I haven't seen.
Hoisting him up a ship's mast.
Yeah,
that was
sick. Like the cool. That was different. I liked that.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. If at any point during this movie did Frank Langella look like any different? Did he have like a red eyes or like fangs or ghosty face? Like, I don't think he did.
Yeah, not really until the rapid aging at the end. He does become a wolf a lot. Remember we talked about the wolf thing on the Bram Stoker's Dracula episode and how odd that was. There's a lot of wolf action in this one. He turns into a wolf almost as much as he turns into a bat, I feel like.
I'm just trying to remember if anyone other than Mina like transformed at any point into like makeup that was meant to look like a vampire
or an
undead. I don't think he did. I don't even think he ever had like blood on him.
I don't remember about blood, but yeah, he never really takes on like the super like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, you know, like he mostly just looks like a guy. Let's put it that way.
He mostly
just looks like a normal dude.
Like, there's scenes where, you know, they pull focus to the fact that he has no reflection. Like, that happens a few times. But, like, visually.
Like, physically, cosmetically, not really.
Yeah.
I don't think he has, like, pointy ears or anything.
That's part of why I use the word flat, because I do think that, and again, not to compare this to Bram Stoker, but Bram Stoker's Dracula looks different in so many frames. He's different from, you know, one scene to the next, depending on if he's, you know, had enough blood to drink and he's like, you know, healthy, or if he's whatever. And
or if he's put his bumpets in his hair.
Whatever, right? And I think what bothered me about this Dracula is he just looked the same. Like, he literally didn't have a hair on his, like, head, his like coif out of place. I don't know. I just needed him to be a little more like gritty, grimy, messy, like scary. And he just looked to me too composed all the time or something.
Very polished.
Yeah, too polished. Yeah. That's just me.
He had that good feathered hair.
God.
I was into it.
Well, it's good, you know, this is why we all have our own flavors.
Indeed. But I think that's basically all the spoilers of Dracula.
Yeah.
1979.
Yeah, that's Dracula 1979. Some of us loved it, some of us hated it, and that's okay.
One of us hated it.
Yep. Sure did. What are we doing next week?
Well, next week I am picking the movie, and my pick is Bones and All.
Ooh.
Have you seen this, or just excited to see it?
I read it, and I saw it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot it was based on a book.
The book is incredible.
And it sounds like you enjoyed the movie as well.
I mean, yep.
Okay. All right.
No need to wait till next week, guys.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I have been really excited to see this since it came out. It was in 2022, which is shocking to me. I have actually had a DVD copy of this sitting like on our TV table for at least a couple of years and still have not gotten around to watching it. I'm very excited about it because it's directed by Luca Guadagnino, who I fucking love almost everything he's done. Timmy Chalamet is in it. Mark Rylance is in it. Oh yeah, I still need to read the Netflix synopsis, which is: when a lonely teen meets a drifter who shares her dark desires, they embark on a road trip to find her mother and the secret to her insatiable hunger.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why do you know anything about this story?
Nope. I just know it exists because of the copy of it that's been sitting on our TV stand for 2 years now.
Yeah, I think this was pretty recently added to Netflix, and I saw it today, and I was like, okay, I'm finally committing. I need to like give myself a reason to finally fucking watch this movie.
When you said it, I was like, this is on Netflix?
Yep.
Or are we going to have to pull out the DVD?
Oh, no. I was this close to watching it this weekend because I was so excited that it was on Netflix.
Oh, nice.
And also, Luca Guadagnino did Call Me By Your Name, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. Yep. Also featuring Timmy Shimmy, as we call him here in my household.
Timmy Shimmy. Oh, I'm going to start using that. I like that.
You can credit Ella, my 17-year-old daughter, for Timmy Shimmy.
Yeah, Luca is an amazing director. Like, oh, yeah. Anyways. Bones and all. Yay. We're watching it next week.
Amazing.
All right. Well, that is all for this week's episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix. But before we go, don't forget to check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube, Amoncast, Ehmoncast, and TikTok at Amoncast. And you can also find the link to our Discord server in the show notes. Come join, come chat with us. Let us know what you've been watching and reading and listening to. Yeah.
Rank your favorite Dracula movies.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Rank. Some sicko out there has seen all 500. I mean, maybe not on our Discord, but somebody, I mean, I'm sure many people have. That's the master ranking I want to see. All 500 Dracula adaptations ranked. That would be bonkers.
Oh, I'll take to Reddit about it.
I'm sure
somebody there has done it.
There you go. But yeah, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. All the episodes are out there, and so is the merch store.
And leave us a horny review because we decided that's the only kind. Actually, that's the only kind that we'll take now. So
we only accept horny reviews now.
Oh, yeah. If there's no horny content, we're deleting it.
We're deleting your review.
Because we have control over that.
Even if it's like a horny one-star review, as long as it's horny, we'll still accept it.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Well, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Allison with a Y.
I'm Allison with an I.
And I'm Patrick.
Bye.
Bye.